Antipsychotic drugs were a major factor in reducing the number of people living in mental hospitals in the United States from over 500,000 in 1955 to fewer than 100,000 in 1996. For people today who did not know the world before the advent of these treatments, the change is almost unimaginable. As a first-year medical student, I visited Kankakee State Hospital in Illinois and saw a burly ward attendant hose down dozens of filthy, naked, incoherent patients in an unfurnished day room supplied with gutters for the runoff water. This memory now seems more like a nightmare than like something I witnessed with my own eyes. My first job after finishing my residency in 1974 was as the second-to-last director of a once venerable institution, the Boston State Hospital, which had formerly housed thousands of patients and been spread over hundreds of acres with dozens of buildings, including greenhouses, gardens, and workshops, most of them by then in ruins. During my time there, patients were gradually dispersed into the community, the blanket term for the anonymous shelters and nursing homes where most of them ended up. Ironically, the hospital was started as an asylum, a word meaning sanctuary, that gradually took on a sinister connotation. It actually did offer a sheltered community where everybody knew the patients' names and idiosyncrasies. In 1979, shortly after I went to work at the VA, the Boston State Hospital's gates were permanently locked, and it became a ghost town. During my time at Boston State, I continued to work at the MMHC Psychopharmacology Lab, which was now focusing on another direction for research. In the 1960s, scientists at the National Institutes of Health had begun to develop techniques for isolating and measuring hormones and neurotransmitters in blood and the brain. Neurotransmitters are chemical messengers that carry information from neuron to neuron, enabling us to engage effectively with the world. Now that scientists were finding evidence that abnormal levels of norepinephrine were associated with depression and of dopamine with schizophrenia, there was hope that we could develop drugs that target specific brain abnormalities. That hope was never fully realized, but our efforts to measure how drugs could affect mental symptoms led to another profound change in the profession. Researchers' need for a precise and systematic way to communicate their findings resulted in the development of the so-called research diagnostic criteria, to which I contributed as a lowly research assistant. These eventually became the basis for the first systematic system to diagnose psychiatric problems, the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the DSM, which is commonly referred to as the Bible of psychiatry. The foreword to the landmark 1980 DSM-3 was appropriately modest and acknowledged that this diagnostic system was imprecise. So imprecise that it never should be used for forensic or insurance purposes. As we will see, that modesty was tragically short-lived.